All right, so we are continuing on with our investigation of Windows Azure in the real world, or the real cloud, or the real sky, however you want to think about it. Yeah. And we're with Adrian Withy, who's a developer for Milliman. Yeah. And you guys do some very interesting work that requires compute-intensive computation. So talk to me a little bit about what you guys do at Milliman.
Okay, well, at Milliman, we develop a software, a suite of software called MGAlpha.
Okay.
MGAlpha is a life insurance pricing and projection system. Hmm. It's traditionally been a desktop application, and we've developed that successfully for about 20 years.
Okay.
And about 2 years ago, we took the venture to port it to the cloud.
Okay.
And so we've spent the last 2 years developing both a new web-based management portal for management of actuarial models,
cool.
as well as a large-scale grid computing platform that we call MGAlpha Compute for Azure.
Nice. Yeah. So the MGAlpha Compute for Azure is very interesting, and certainly to our audience.
Yeah.
I'd love to know how that works. So
okay.
can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, MGAlpha Compute for Azure is an HPC-style system. We have a long history of running HPC type systems. Our preferred is Microsoft HPC Server, and essentially what we did is we took that experience and we built an end-to-end HPC system within Windows Azure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So let's talk a little bit about this is modeling software, projection software. So you have to be accurate,
mm-hmm.
and you have to be pretty fast, and you have to use a lot of CPUs. Right,
mm-hmm.
or a lot of nodes, if you will, in Windows Azure parlance. So
yep.
Talk to me about going from the desktop from HPC to Windows Azure. I mean, what was that movement like?
Well, I mean, we have an embarrassing parallel problem, right? So we basically take a large set of input data.
Mm-hmm.
We distribute it on a lot of cores at the same time. There's very little collaboration between all of these different tasks. So we take a job, split it up into tasks. We run our core calculation engine that's a native Win32 application.
Mm.
And we execute this on all of these tasks. We then combine the results, merge the results, perform some additional calculations, and then return the results to the user.
Mm-hmm.
And both with our desktop, so our desktop users can upload and submit a job straight from their laptop,
mm-hmm.
And that will run on our grid platform. We also have a web-based UI that you can submit jobs in batch to and then manage the results up in Azure as well.
Excellent. And so essentially, I mean, you're using, when you said task, you're actually using a task type from our parallel patterns library?
No, not really.
Not really.
Yeah.
You just use that name. It's just classic. Take a bunch of data, break it up into pieces, compute all over it, join it back up, rock and roll.
Yeah, correct.
It's a classic pattern.
Yeah, and what makes it hard is that it has to be a very highly dependable system.
Mm.
So our customers rely on the results of these calculations for regulatory reporting. So there's financial implications for jobs failing or for results being incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
So this, what makes the problem hard is both the dependability, where if we get a job, we have to finish it. We can't return a job and say, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, the scale that we have to run on. We typically run at 10,000 cores or more. We run at any time, we're running 15 different grid environments for different users, different customers, mm-hmm. and different purposes. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
And so how's it working? How's it scaling?
Yeah, I mean, it's scaling great. I mean, we've been in development for about 2 years now. Hardcore, intensive development for 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's running great. Yeah.
Great. Now, so you spoke about your development. Let's talk real briefly before we get back into the nuts and bolts of this.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out you have a pretty interesting agile development environment, and you have distributed development locations, right? So you have Seattle, you have London, you have other locations. Talk to me about your development process.
Okay, so we are an extremely agile team. We
mm-hmm.
we do both agile and extreme programming. We have three development teams. Each development team is about 4 to 6 people.
Cool.
And the way in which we manage the complexity of working in distributed teams, both distributed physically, as well as there's an 8-hour time difference between Seattle and London, is that we decouple the systems in the way in which you decouple a software system. So we, the interfaces between our systems are literally files and exes that we change as little as possible. We have well-defined interfaces between our teams, and extreme programming doesn't allow you much time to pick up the phone and wait eight hours for someone to come online. Mm. So we just make sure that we never have to.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about extreme programming. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is that?
Extreme programming.
I mean, I'm sure it's a terminology that means something, but.
Yeah, well, extreme programming is really the practices, and there's some core principles behind it. Mm-hmm. That you, we pair program on almost 100% of code.
Okay.
We do all test-driven development. We have continuous integration. As an example, every time we chuck in code into our system, it'll run through various levels of tests, and we'll get feedback as soon as possible on the quality of the code that we've checked in. When we check in at one point, it will actually deploy a grid to Azure, ask the grid to spin up nodes, and then give it a job, compute the job, and check the results. Every single time we check in, it'll do this.
Nice.
So if something breaks or if someone, we'll know right away. I think extreme programming is. I think it's TDD and pair programming is the core practices.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting terminology. I mean, a lot of programming is extreme. I mean, mm-hmm. Like extreme programming, writing machine level code. So you mentioned exes and files. So you have this native component which basically houses all of your core IP and core algorithms for the compute intensive jobs it has to do. And then you feed it files. You give it a file location, it computes the data that's there and spits something back.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I mean. Like what when you said exes and files.
Well, our core calculation engine is an example of where one team develops a component and it's used by another team. Right. Our core calculation engine is C and C++. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is dynamically compiled, on the desktop by the users. And we call that just using parameters. And it will know where its input is.
Great.
We don't have to worry about unmanaged calls and things like that.
Mm-hmm. No, we have to worry about interop between managed and native code because they don't even interact at all.
Great. New process start.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about your architecture. So you're using Windows Azure Compute, you're using Windows Azure Blob Storage and Table Storage?
Yeah, so we use Compute and then we use Azure Storage.
Okay.
Azure Storage, we do primarily blobs, queues, and tables.
Okay.
We try to do as much as we can between queues and blobs, keep it simple.
Okay. And then you have this portal that you've written as a web role in ASP.NET.
Yeah, ASP.NET MVC.
Okay.
I can give you a brief overview of our architecture.
That would be great.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll give you an overview of the MGF, a Compute for Azure architecture. So let me start at a really high level. If this is the Windows Azure, and here we have MGF. Compute for Azure. At a really high level, we have desktop consumers that can submit jobs to us. We process the jobs and then we return the results. We also have a web UI that does the same. So that's it at a really high level. Sorry for the naughty diagram. What's interesting, so let me take the MGF for Compute for Azure and blow it up a little bit. MGF for Compute for Azure has two principal components. One is a grid manager. The grid manager is responsible for overall management of the grid. It's responsible for for hosting an interface that that consumers of the grid can submit jobs to, query job status, download results. It's responsible for the overall health of the grid. It's responsible for hosting if this is kind of submit and query. We also host an ASP.NET MVC web portal for users to log on, and they can view the state of their grid, and they can manage deployment, they can turn on and off, core. So grid manager, and this is in essence always on. It's a couple of web roles and a couple of worker roles.
Yeah? Okay.
And then what we have is this grid manager can deploy and one or more grid units. So and a grid unit is how is the key architectural concept that enables us to run at such large scale. I mean, we run we commonly run at 10,000 cores. Theoretically, I think this could scale much, much higher. So there is, in essence, one or more grid units. A grid unit can be up to 1,500 cores.
Mm. Yeah.
And the grid manager is responsible for managing the deployment of these grid units. So the grid manager will actually deploy these. In Azure terms, these are hosted services.
Okay.
So each grid unit would be a hosted service. So this would be one hosted service, and these would be hosted services. This whole thing together is one environment or one instance of the Azure Compute System.
Okay.
So anytime we're running about 15 of these, and then these can run up to, we've run 10,000 cores.
Wow.
So in the way in which the I'm a little bit further and give you a brief overview of the workflow of the jobs.
Okay.
So if we have we use Azure queues to manage the state of our system. The state of our system flows through using queues for the most part. So if we have here we have, let's say, a job request queue, and we have jobs coming in. So this is a job. We have jobs coming in. Let's say this is the grid manager. This is a highly, highly simplistic view of the system. We have job requests coming in. These job requests come and are accepted, and then they go into a distribution queue. These jobs are then distributed to the grid units, where the grid units will pick up the job, and then this is where the job is then scheduled into tasks. So this is where the one job is then split up into one or more tasks, executed on the nodes within Azure, and then merged. Results then come back.
Great.
Yeah, the whole time we're reporting status back to the users. We're managing the state of the jobs both within the grid manager and the grid unit. And one of the key principles here is that there is no communication between the grid units. So these grid units can be on different data centers in different parts of the world. You have a one-to-one correspondence. So each one of these is a hosted service. Each one of these will have its own Azure storage service. So you have in the same data center. And then the communication between the grid manager and the grid unit is very minimal.
Excellent.
So we're able to manage the very large scale of the system where what's going on between here and here is really just messages.
Awesome. So. Great. I mean, in some sense, shared state is how you kill parallelism. So.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. They should be autonomous. And then, of course, the grid units handle spinning down the nodes so you don't keep paying for them when you're done with them, right? Spins them down.
Well, the grid manager is responsible for deployment.
Okay.
So what the user will say, okay, I need, if they needed 5,000 cores, mm-hmm. they would say, okay, I want 5 grid units of 1,000 each.
Okay.
And the user would input those parameters into the UI. The grid would spin up. They don't really have to do anything. They don't have to go and spin these up in Azure.
Nope.
They'll come online. Then the user will send jobs to them.
Mm-hmm.
The user can shut them off. We've also developed an auto shut off feature as people have left their grids on,
and which costs money.
Yeah.
Even if they're not doing anything, you're still taking up compute resources.
Yeah.
Excellent. And so this is running smoothly, and people are happy. And let's talk a little. What were some of the challenges of going from the
on-premises client model to this distributed cloud model? Like, people are going to be thinking about these types of things, you know, moving to the cloud. I mean, the reason you guys moved to the cloud was to take the IT burden off of customers. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to pay a lot of money for an IT department if they don't have to have one.
Right?
You have to buy the hardware, you have to maintain the hardware, you have to update the software that runs on the hardware. The cloud just moves all that away from you. But it adds some burden to the people who are then managing the cloud. And so that's what I want to talk about. It's like when you go from traditional computing models, which is in somebody's office building, to could be anywhere, depending upon your location. Does that add any sort of complexity to your world when to build this model, to make sure that's reliable, scalable, secure?
Well, there's things that are hard and there's things that are costly about each model, right?
Yep.
But look, I mean, the model that we've adopted is that we, with, you know, with four developers, we run 15 grids and we develop, right?
Nice.
So we don't have, you know, we don't have a, you know, a dedicated ops team that goes and runs these grid, and we get that from the high level of automation. You know, everything is highly automated. So we are able to do that and develop at the same time. Mm-hmm. What we don't have is we don't have a team of IT people running, you know, maintaining server hardware, and you know, and we don't have a lot of kit. Mm. We literally develop without a single server.
Wow.
So, you know, our build server's up in the cloud.
Nice.
Our support machines are up in the cloud. You know, the only kit we have is our laptops.
Interesting. That is an interesting model, and certainly requires a lot of faith, because, you know, the internet is a physics problem.
Mm-hmm.
And once those electrons aren't getting to your laptop, then you're basically out of luck. But, I mean, obviously you can still write code, you just can't deploy, is what you're talking about. I mean, everything's in the cloud, but you do have stuff on your machine that you can then stay busy when the network goes down, which of course it does, because the cloud is full of problems all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why you have to deal with redundancy and stuff like that, that Azure actually takes care of for you automatically.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, we have, clearly we have a very high level of dependence on Windows Azure.
Yeah.
So that you know, that is our only risk. Mm-hmm. is the availability of Windows Azure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we don't have a lot of other risks, but, you know, we do have that one.
It's interesting, because you're in the business of risk management, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's beautiful. I mean, great. So nice job to the Azure team and to you guys for really taking advantage of what's offered. And I'm glad to hear that it's working.
Yeah. I mean, we've had our ups and downs. There's been challenges, but in the end, the proof is that you know, we have been able to do this with your guys' help.
Good.
So
and it's just going to keep getting better.
Yeah, hope so.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to meet you.
Yeah, great to meet you.
And nice work.
Yeah, take care.
Bon.